It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. Today the show focuses on women, and specifically events limited to women athletes. The Alaska Ski for Women is coming up soon, and after that the Gold Nugget Triathlon, which is said to be the largest all-woman triathlon around. There are many others as well. I'll be talking with competitors and organizers to find out what these events are like, how they feel different from co-ed races, and why it's important to have competitions specifically for women. We'll also hear a story today about a woman dealing with the special challenges of going back outdoors with kids, and we'll have our monthly training calendar, getting you updated on what you need to prepare for the year's endurance events. It's all coming up on Outdoor Explorer, Alaska Public Media's audio outdoor magazine. Well, right now in the studio, I have a couple of people who know a lot about the Ski for Women, which is kind of the most fun ski event that happens in Anchorage during the year. I've always really enjoyed taking my daughters to it. Don't get to do that anymore, unfortunately. And we used to have everybody in the neighborhood get together to make their costumes, and there was tons of excitement. And then you'd go out and you'd see these amazing costumes and out there in the stadium at Kincaid, and then if you skied afterwards, you'd find all kinds of tinsel and glitter in the snow, so you knew that the Ski for Women had been there. So for our first segment today, we're going to be talking about the Ski for Women, which is coming up this coming weekend, February 4, if you're hearing the initial broadcast of today's show. And I have two guests in the studio to talk about it. Jenny DeGrappa is the race director, and Diane Barnett is a longtime participant and sounds like has been involved in organizing outdoor events in Anchorage for a very long time. And thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us, Charles.
So, Jenny, let's hit the details to begin with. I mean, this is a big event. There's a lot of people who come out, women only, as participants. Sort of how many skiers do you usually get?
Well, over the years, it's been about an average of 1,000 women. Just with the low snow levels and poor weather the past couple of years, the numbers did drop considerably. But last year, we welcomed almost 900 women of all ages and an additional 100 or so volunteers on race day.
Uh-huh. And we call it a race, but the biggest part of it is not a race, right? It's more like a sort of a costume parade.
Correct. So, well, we, of course, have the costume contest, mm-hmm. which is probably what most look forward to. But in addition, we have what we call the party wave. And this is an untimed ski. Of course, I don't want to call it race, but it's an untimed skiing loop where many whom just come for the race have their costume right. on, and they kind of ski around the loop.
You couldn't really race in some of these crazy costumes. I mean, if people haven't seen them, I mean, some of them are like huge giraffes or these enormous things.
Yeah, we have had just numerous costumes over the years, which the giraffes were very amazing costumes. A couple of years ago, we also had a Chinese dragon, where I want to say there were about 10 women mm-hmm. all connected with this just wonderful
costume.
That one
was amazing, yeah.
Yeah, but of course, there are many women who actually do race in more raceable right. costumes, so it's...
They really race.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, Diane, it sounds like you have been involved in women's athletic events for a long time. You were mentioning very early involvement in the Gold Nugget Triathlon.
Correct, yes.
Why do you think it's important to have events for women? What makes it special, why does it matter?
You know, growing up in Alaska and the darkness in the wintertime, I think women need some way of getting out of the house and off the couch. And I think all of the women's events kind of support that, along with supporting the community.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'll find that all four of the events that are in the trip, in the patch, have something to do with supporting the community.
Mm-hmm. Is there something about having it be just women that makes it more fun or makes it more welcoming? Or why not have everybody involved?
Well, I'm not sure.
For you personally.
Well, personally, I think like with the triathlon, it's nice if I'm swimming in a pool, if there's just women there, and I don't have these big guys passing me and kept going by in the lane. And yeah, I'm not sure.
Just
about
a little
that.
Bit more relaxing. Yeah. What about you, Jenny? How do you feel about the women-only part of it? Why is that important?
Well, I think so. One thing to note is that almost 25% of the skiers every year are brand new skiers.
Oh wow!
And it can be intimidating just learning any new sport or activity. And so I think it's just natural for women to feel more comfortable around each other. And so I think that's certainly part of it. You know, there are so many events for men. For example, it is on Super Bowl Sunday, which is, you know, only men get to participate in the NFL currently.
In terms of playing. Not many of them.
So, you know, it's just one small thing for women to kind of get together and, you know, support each other and just kind of that morale of women in the community.
Where did the whole costume thing come from? Do either of you know where that is? Was that from the beginning, a costume thing?
No, it wasn't. It was just a competitive race, I think, for almost the first 10 years, from what I can remember. Hmm. And then I think they thought, well, we can maybe get more participants, because people were a little intimidated if they were new skiers to enter a race. So when the party wave started, I think that's when the numbers for the Ski for Women
really took off.
Yes.
Have you dressed up in a costume, Dan?
We dress up in a costume every year, Charles.
Oh, do you? Okay. Give me some examples of what you've done.
Okay, we have been dominoes.
Oh, neat.
We have been red solo cups.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. That must have been a lot of work to make that, right?
And that's, of course, when the Red Solo Cup song was so popular. Uh-huh. We have been candy corns.
Oh, okay.
And skiing penguins.
Oh, nice.
This year, we're going to be the Olympic doubtfuls. So each of us are going to represent a different country.
Okay.
So we'll see how that goes.
What about you, Jenny? Have you dressed up?
Yes, I did. And it was actually somewhat of an afterthought last year. Well, afterthought, but prior to the race, where I was getting ready the night before and realized, oh, this is such a big part of the race. You know, people call it the Mardi Gras of the North. And so I kind of threw together a Wonder Woman costume. And I think that is going to be my signature costume for the remainder
Woman.
Of my years as volunteer director.
Especially because the big movie came out, right?
Well, and it just so happened that the movie had come out kind of right around then. So, I mean, it wasn't kind of a planned thing. But
perfect. So, this happens on Super Bowl Sunday, and how did that come about? What's the history of it? I mean, there's different stories that float around in the community about why it's on Super Bowl Sunday.
Well, originally, Anne Mize and Sally Burkholder, 22 years ago now, were really interested in getting more women out to ski in the community. Knowing that Anchorage has over 150 kilometers of trails, you know, they thought that this would be a great opportunity, you know, to throw a small event. Well, almost 1,000 women showed up, and when they initially chose the event date, it was really the only date on the entire calendar for the Kincaid Chalet that actually was available. And it was just before the event day that they realized, oh my goodness, this is actually Super Bowl Sunday. Uh-huh. And it's really just continued to be the event day ever since.
It was Super Bowl Sunday, yet everybody showed up anyway.
Yeah, everyone showed up anyway. And it is great because if you are interested in watching the Super Bowl every year, you have the opportunity to do so because we wrap up in the early afternoon.
You do it in the morning, right? The game doesn't start till the afternoon.
Correct, yeah.
Although, as far as I'm concerned, when the Super Bowl's going on, it's the best time to go skiing because you don't have much competition. So that's my own thing. Let me just tell everybody, it's Outdoor Explorer. We're talking about women's athletic events, and right now talking about the Ski for Women, which is coming up on February 4th, Sunday, 10:30 in the morning is the first race. And my guests are Jenny DiGrappa, who's the race director, and Diane Barnett, who is a participant and longtime organizer and helper in the athletic community. Let's go through some of the details. I assume you have to sign up in advance, or can you just show up?
Well, we prefer you sign up in advance. Uh-huh. You can register online through midnight on January 31st. You can go directly to the Nordic Skiing Association.
Which would have been yesterday when we're airing. But
right. So. But you can sign up. So the in-person and quote-unquote late registration is Friday, February 2nd from noon until 7 p.m. at REI. If you don't make...
And that's actually kind of fun to show up there because there'll be a lot of people at those tables and you'll meet your friends and it's kind of neat to... Those big pickup things can be fun.
Yeah, we've really made it somewhat more of an event day, and we're so generous to REI for their sponsorship of that. Yeah, we have preview of merchandise. You can also buy merchandise there. This year we'll have some silent auction items. You can buy it now. And then also just to kind of see your and interact with your fellow participants. But then we do allow same-day race registration, but it is only for the party wave. So we're just not able to get you on the timing sheets in time. But of course, the party wave is available for same day. And we do have almost 10% of our participants sign up on race day. So it's certainly an option.
Sure. A lot of times there are parking problems out there because it is such a big event. So what's the parking situation for people who want to watch? Because watching this is really fun. I mean, it really is. You see some amazing costumes.
Yeah, certainly. We do have many spectators every year. Uh-huh. We're really fortunate for many years now to have Premier Alaska Tours running buses from Kincaid Elementary. And even with close to 1,000 participants this past year, the buses were actually relatively empty. So I would say we're getting better by the year with parking, and people do try to carpool. Mm-hmm. So we really, I think, have it down, and those buses are very efficient, and we have a good parking crew.
So you just, on your way out, you'll see the school there on your left. And just park there and the bus will be there shortly.
Yeah.
Makes it more convenient.
Yeah.
For sure. Okay. And how much is the fee for being in the race?
So there is a minimum suggested donation of $35, which is very small. Mm-hmm. And of course, it's just a suggested donation.
So you're hoping more.
Of course. We, uh-huh. 100% of the proceeds do go to programs that either support victims of domestic violence or that support programs to who are working to stop the cycle of domestic violence. So
that's great.
But then we also donate all of the proceeds from the silent auction as well as the merchandise sales. So it's really,
it's a big fundraiser.
It's a really huge fundraiser for the community, many programs in the community.
Okay. So I kind of think of it as all going to AWAKE, Abuse Women Aid in Crisis, but it goes to other groups as well.
It does. So initially when the race began, there was such a wonderful showing of women, of course, that the race committee, which eventually formed shortly after that first race, they decided that they wanted to donate the proceeds. And so initially, they were always granted to AWAKE shelter here in Anchorage. But over the years, as more participants have been involved and more money has been raised, there has been a real want from the committee to kind of expand who we are supporting. And this year we in 2017 we granted out $41,000.
Wow.
To six programs. Five of those are in Anchorage, and actually one of them is in Seward. So we're looking forward to again dispersing those funds this next year.
So you're putting all the effort into putting on the race, and so you get to decide where the money is going to go. That seems fair.
Well, myself and the race committee, and we worked with the Alaska Network for Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault this past year to really get the word out to the entire state, because this is Alaska Ski for Women.
Not just the
Anchorage Ski for Women, although I should note that there are now three additional races, Fairbanks, Mat-Su, and Homer all have their own Ski for Women races now, which are on a much smaller scale. But because we do call ourselves Alaska Ski for Women, we really do want to support programs across the state.
And it's not all the party wave. You also have some very competitive skiers out there who are trying to be the best.
Yes, certainly. We have several hundred participants every year who do come specifically to race. So we have our duathlon event.
What's the duathlon?
So the duathlon is a combined ski. So you ski
Classic and skate.
You skate ski, and you also diagonal ski. You do both races.
Got you. And change halfway through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, of course, we have the individual skate race, and then we have the individual classic race.
Okay. And all 5 kilometers, or what's the distance?
So all races are 4 kilometers in length.
4 kilometers.
Four kilometers in length. Of course, the duathlon is 8 kilometers.
Okay. So, Diane, it sounds like you've been participating in this from the beginning or for a long time?
You know, I've participated ever since 97, and I think it started in, is it 96? Do you know? Yes. So that first year, I think I missed it, even though I was skiing quite a bit back in those days. And
have you seen it change over the years?
I've seen it grow, you know, there in the up to 11 when we had good snow, it grew every year, which was fun. And then when the party wave came in, as you said, you know, women take their children out there and they dress up. It's just a hoot.
It's hilarious.
To see everybody. So, you know, if you're not going to ski, we encourage anybody to come out and watch because it's a lot of fun.
You don't even have to be able to ski to wear a costume and just stand there, right?
That's right. But the costumes are just so enjoyable.
It's amazing how much trouble and effort people put into them. I mean, some of these costumes must take months to make.
Oh, they do. I know that one group, and I really can't tell you the name of them, but it's a group of ladies that work all year.
Mm-hmm.
And one year they were different, not band, they were orchestra instruments. And they were just beautiful, Charles. And of course, the sunflowers were gorgeous.
Yep, I remember
and
that
everybody
one, yeah.
said, "How are they wearing those?" And they were very active.
And
for,
they looked like they must
years.
Have weighed a ton too.
Yes, but they were light. They were light. They used light pipe, and I know some of them used aircraft material. You know, for the wings when they were the butterflies.
The butterflies were beautiful.
Oh, the butterflies! The
it's
wind
funny,
was
you know,
blowing.
After all these years, we remember them, right? That shows you just how amazing they were.
Exactly.
Yeah. And but the other thing to emphasize is if you want to go, you do not have to be an artist. You don't have to spend a month making your costume. You could come up with something the night before.
Absolutely.
Because my girls have done that many times, and it's still a lot of fun. Great. Well, thanks so much for both of you being here, and good luck with the race. I hope that we have great snow and great weather and more years of good snow because we had some really tough ones there. Yeah. All right, thanks. Jenny DiGrappa is the race director for the Alaska Ski for Women, and Diane Barnett, a participant. The race is coming up on February 4th. You can find the website for the race on our website at outdoorexplorer.org if you want to get more information. Stay with us as Outdoor Explorer continues. The next segment comes from our repeating feature, recorded live in front of an audience. The Trail Tales Show is put on by Alaska Trails at the 49th State Brewery. In the piece we're going to hear, Erin Whitney Whitmer talks about the challenges of getting outdoors again with kids.
Good evening. On a night devoted to trails, my story veers slightly off trail, but it's one which has made me extremely grateful for trails to follow, both literally and figuratively. I've always assumed that people who grow up in Alaska learn to hunt as kids, everyone except for me. I came to hunting as an adult, and I had one of my best experiences this past fall. But it's taken me a while to reach that point, and to be sure, I still have much to learn, which brings to mind one of my first outings about 5 years ago. At the time, I had a 2-year-old, and an 11-month-old, whom I was still nursing. My husband and I were several years out of graduate school, living in Boulder, Colorado. And I have to say, Boulder is not exactly an epicenter of hunting. They practically write obituaries for the prairie dogs they exterminate there. But all joking aside, I lived there for over a decade, And I loved its easy outdoor lifestyle, as well as the abundance of overeducated science geeks like myself. But I still nursed a hollow feeling from time to time. I longed for a renewed sense of connection with the cycles of land and life, and I craved more than just biking to work, using cloth bags at the grocery store, and competing for parking spots at mountain trailheads. And without an ocean nearby to replicate my childhood fishing excursions in Alaska, hunting seemed like one way I could make that connection. So I found myself sitting in my sleeping bag in the pre-dawn winter darkness in a remote area of north central Colorado. My husband was home with the kids, and I was with a friend who had a pop-up camper with a heater. How hard could this be? We weren't roughing it at all. Except that the heater had broken in the night, and I could feel the canvas camper top weighed down with new snow pressing against my head. There were ice crystals in my nose, and my fingers were numb. My headlamp illuminated a breast pump that had become only partially operable, and the remaining plastic flange was cracked from the cold. My hunting partner, Brent, was stirring in his curtained-off wing of the camper while I struggled with this barely functioning device, willing it to not break on our first day of our trip, because it would have been game over right there. And I have to say, he was a saint. He never seemed to let on that having a lactating mother as a hunting partner was anything unusual. Because women go hunting in the middle of winter with breast pumps all the time, right? At this point, I was still optimistic, and I gave myself a pep talk. Back at home, I had arranged play dates for my two-year-old to give my husband a break. I had organized the freezer with pockets of breast milk for the baby, as well as ready-to-eat soups and meals. I was a five-hour drive from home, and a broken breast pump was sure as heck not going to stop me now. So after a cold breakfast, we started hiking along a fence line in about 6 inches of new snow, staying close to the cover of brush. I was wearing about 7 layers of clothing, just about everything I had brought. And I was bringing up the rear, hyper aware of where my rifle was pointing, still anxious and unsure of myself as a new hunter. And all my senses were on alert. Suddenly, in front of me, Brent crouched. And 200 yards below us were three brown cow elk. My heart started thundering in my ears, and I was shaking with adrenaline. I couldn't immediately get the elk in my scope crosshairs, which may have had something to do with the fact that I was shooting left-eyed with a borrowed right-eyed rifle. And I panicked as first one and then the other two animals hopped effortlessly over the fence, over to private property where it was illegal to shoot them. We sat there freezing for over an hour as we willed them to jump back over. They never did. I thought about taking a shot, and I didn't. With that excitement over, we then hiked on a ways until we came to the edge of a clearing, where we sat down to have something to eat and to catch a few fleeting rays of sunshine. And I saw movement off to my right, and we immediately became still, and Brent used his body to block motions with his hands, signaling for me to cut over to an adjacent old road cut while he tried to call the animals closer. So I crept over to the road cut, readied my rifle, and then heard the raking sound of my Gore-Tex pants brush against each other. You guessed it, so did the elk. I had blown it again. I pretty much felt like a neophyte at this point. I didn't feel like any match for these animals, and after the events of the morning, I was starting to question whether I was even cut out to be a hunter at all. So with my confidence flagging and the fatigue of the morning wearing on me, I hiked off to relieve myself. And I'm not sure why I hadn't noticed this earlier, but I discovered that the undergarments on the lower half of my body were soaked with blood. I had not menstruated for 3 years through two back-to-back pregnancies, and my body had chosen this moment of all moments to resume that activity. I was not prepared, and I was pissed. Elk hunting is already hard enough by itself, at least for me, and on top of that, my body was now completely out of my control. I started crying as I tried to clean myself with snow. Thankfully, the Gore-Tex pants, which I had cursed earlier, now covered my soaked and, by consequence, frozen undergarments. Did I mention I was wearing all the clothes I had brought? You can see where this is headed. I felt like a fool. I felt reduced to just a weary, worn-out new mom who couldn't handle anything beyond day-to-day existence, let alone hunting and sub-zero temperatures. I somehow made it through the rest of the day, but I'm not exactly sure how. After we made it back to the camp that night, I again spent a cold night in my sleeping bag. We never did get the heater to work. I somehow coaxed the breast pump to limp reluctantly through its routine. We tried again the next day, but I was reeling emotionally, and I knew it was time to quit. It seemed inappropriate to tell Brent that I was bleeding like a wounded animal. So I vaguely told him that I had a gastrointestinal bug instead. And we packed up and went home. As we were sitting in his truck that night, I felt battered and exhausted. My fingers were cracked and bloody from the cold and exposure. But as I was staring into the bright holes of our headlights shining in front of us, I had a realization. I felt more connected to the rawness of life than I had ever felt before, which was the very thing I had craved. I was giving life while trying to take life, and it was completely out of my control. I was stripped bare. And it occurred to me that maybe that was the ultimate connection, to feel powerless to the cycles of land and life, to stop pretending we have control over our lives, and to stop holding so tightly to specific outcomes. I may not have gotten my elk, but I reclaimed a connection to something far greater, myself. Thank you.
That was Erin Whitney Whitmer talking recently at the Trail Tales event put on by Alaska Trails. You can find out more about Alaska Trails' work advocating for trails at our site on outdoorexplorer.org. Stay tuned. We'll have much more to come on today's show about events for women.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. We're talking about events that are put on for women, specifically women's athletic events on today's show. And I have one of Alaska's most celebrated and most accomplished women's athletes in the studio right now, Shannon Donnelly, who has won the Gold Nugget Triathlon 8 times and pretty much won all the other triathlons around Alaska and was on the podium at the Ironman World Championship in Kona in 2011 with a 5th place. And Shannon is... also done the Gold Nugget in a lot of different ways, the mother-daughter team and all that. So I'm really, really excited to have her in the studio. Thanks for being here, Shannon.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me.
So triathlon is such a unique sport because it really takes this all-around ability, this amazing level of fitness, and it must be something that at some point really captured your passion and that you really poured yourself into, plus some obvious athletic talent, but to have had the kind of career you've had is pretty amazing. How did this become your event?
Sure. Well, I've always enjoyed running and biking, you know, done a lot of both of those things growing up, and I actually ended up swimming sort of by default, you know, had a knee injury, so had knee surgery and ended up in the pool. and had a friend doing triathlon who talked me into joining her. So that was several years ago. I didn't grow up swimming, so I'm kind of an adult swimmer. So yeah, that's sort of how I got hooked.
I hear from people that swimming is kind of the hardest part because there's so much technique involved to be a good swimmer. And so for a lot of triathletes, that's sort of their weakest link. How does it work out for you?
I've actually learned to be a pretty decent swimmer over the years. There's lots of master's groups here in Alaska that folks can join, which is what I did. I joined a master's group where I think the first time I did a sprint distance triathlon, it took me about 15 minutes to swim a 500. And, my better years, I was swimming closer to the 6-minute 500.
Uh-huh.
So you certainly can.
Yeah.
You can learn to swim as an adult and certainly improve.
Uh-huh. Cool. So you've obviously been in events for men and women, as also like the Gold Nugget, which is just for
sure.
Women.
Yep.
What's the difference? What makes that a special thing or something that's worth having?
I think women's events in general seem to draw a really big range of women, definitely not just the elite athletes. I think it's a really non-threatening environment. There's sort of this feeling of sisterhood, very supportive. You'll see the faster athletes out there cheering for the beginners, as well as the beginners out there cheering for the elite athletes. So I don't know, I think there's something about all women's events that really makes people feel supported and included, and just a really non-threatening environment. There's a lot of energy, sort of synergy and everything that goes with it. But I think mostly it's a pretty non-threatening environment, and people feel pretty comfortable in joining in all women's events if they're beginners.
Yeah. Well, as an elite athlete, I'm just sort of supposing that as a woman, your chances of actually being the very first person across the finish line are probably not that great. But in a women's triathlon, you're the absolute winner, right?
That would be true. Yeah, absolutely.
Does that matter to you?
I all women's events are fun. Like I said, there's lots of energy there, but it's fun to be in any event,
uh-huh.
Co-ed or all women's events. But the Gold Nugget is, it's a pretty unique event. There's lots of energy out there on race day. And I feel like here in Alaska, it's certainly got a lot of women involved in the sport of triathlon that otherwise, certainly wouldn't have entered a triathlon. I think it's a pretty inclusive event. I personally, I like the women's events, but I like the co-ed as well.
Yeah. I've been told that it's like the largest all-women's triathlon in the world or something like that.
I have heard that as well. I think almost every state has an all-women's triathlon now. Certainly not as old as the Gold Nugget.
Mm-hmm.
This year will be our 37th anniversary.
Wow.
So it's been going on for quite a while, but all-women's events are definitely getting more popular. Not just in triathlon. We have the Hurtern Half Marathon, which is outrageously popular, and of course, the women's run, the bike for women, the ski for women. There's a whole series of all women's events that are all, they all fill up to capacity.
Yeah, yeah. So do you kind of have a preference for those? And when you're sort of making your schedule of what you're going to do during the year, or do you sort of more focus on, these are the distances that I want to do and these are the accomplishments I want to make? I'm just curious because you're obviously in a category way above most people. And so you might have a different outlook.
Thank you. No, I think actually all of those events are super fun and unique in their own ways. I mean, you could certainly join the Ski for Women and race it if you choose to,
mm-hmm.
but you could also show up with your huge costume with everybody else and just have a blast doing it. So I think you can go into any of these events as competitive as you want to be, or certainly just out there to compete and participate and do it with a bunch of other ladies.
Yeah, yeah. So I know that the Gold Nugget, and I don't know if this is still the case, but in the past, like I've had friends who want to sign up and
mm-hmm.
they're going to be doing something else and they say, Charles, I want you to be online and click the entry thing,
yes.
Like the minute it becomes available, because it's so popular
mm-hmm.
that you have to sort of sign up like right away or it fills up, right?
Correct. Yeah. I'm on the board of directors and we talk about this every year, trying to make it as fair as possible for people to get in. But when we do open registration, we have about 1,500 slots, or maybe we're up to 1,600 slots now, and it does fill up within just a couple of minutes. When we open registration, it is slammed and full within just a few minutes.
That's just amazing. What do you think makes it so popular?
Well, it's definitely gaining popularity. If we could, we always wonder how many people would sign up if we didn't have to cap it, but obviously we have to put a limit on it because of the length of the day and the pool size. We can't, we can only accommodate so many people. But it's a really fun event. I mean, I know you mentioned the competitive athlete part of it, but the majority of the people participating in the Gold Nugget event are not, you know, out there to win it, but they're definitely out there to finish it. And, you know, it's an accomplishment in its own. So I don't know what makes it so popular. I mean, it's a well-organized event. It's fun. You know, we do our best at trying to organize it and make it a, you know, really welcoming environment at everybody at every level.
It's a huge goal for a lot of women, too.
It is.
They sort of focus a lot of the year on on being good in that event on their own terms, you know, that women who are not necessarily going to be anywhere near the front.
Yeah, we just get a lot of neat stories and testimonials. We just got an email last week from a lady who did it last year with her daughter for the first time, and she said they could barely run around the block, you know, and their goal was to work up to the gold nugget, and they're already training this year, and they're so far ahead of where they were last year, and, you know, she gave us all her numbers and how much they're swimming and biking and running, and, you know, it's kind of exciting. It's nice for people to have a goal and something to train for.
Absolutely. So run through the distances in the race. It's considered a short...
It's considered a sprint distance triathlon. Mm-hmm. Triathlon usually has a sprint distance, Olympic, half Ironman, and an Ironman, and so this is considered a sprint distance, which is approximately, you know, our race is 500 yards. You know, it's a pool swim, so it's, you know, not an open water swim, but 500-yard swim, 12-mile bike ride, and a sprint is normally around a 5K run, but just due to the nature of where our course is, it's about a little over 4 miles.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And it's a huge mob scene, so it takes a long time for everybody to get through it. So, obviously, it's a stage start, and you don't really know where you stand with respect to the other competitors.
Yeah, you could finish, you know, when you cross the finish line, there could be somebody that's coming in 7 hours later that could potentially beat you. the day goes on and on.
Wow, that must be a huge volunteer challenge to put on something
that
lasts that
long. 500 volunteers. I think about 60% of those are racers, you know, on the actual race day. Of course, we have volunteers working throughout the year to put the event on. But, yeah, we have over 500 volunteers that, you know, are out there getting things going all
it's
day
incredible.
Long.
Incredible.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Is it pretty much women volunteers?
No, absolutely not. No, I would. I mean, obviously the folks that are racing that are volunteers are women. No, when you have a look around our transition area, we have, you know, it's a very co-ed mix of volunteers. You know, we have folks that are in their lap counting. We have announcers. We have traffic control. We have volunteers that help with the banquet, people that help with the awards. Tons and tons of volunteers, our parking folks, and I would not say it's a majority of women.
Huh, neat.
Yeah.
It's Outdoor Explorer. We're talking about women's events today, right now specifically the Gold Nugget Triathlon, with Shannon Donnelly, who's an amazing athlete, has won it 8 times and also on the board of directors. Shannon, you've also done it as a mother-daughter team. Mm-hmm. Tell me how that works.
Yeah, there's several categories in the Gold Nugget Triathlon. There are different team events. There are school teams, business teams, open teams, and our most popular, which is the mother-daughter team. And I've been lucky enough to do that with my daughter a couple times. I guess we've done it twice together. We also have something that we started a few years ago called the Tri-Gen team, which is mother, daughter, and grandmother, a three-person team, which is kind of exciting to have three generations racing. And last year we had our first quad-gen team where we had a mother, daughter, grandmother, and great-grandmother all competing, which
That's
was really
amazing.
It was really amazing. It's really exciting. So, the mother-daughter
team. So how do you divide it up?
Well, everybody does the race. It's not a team event.
And
that's one thing about the Gold Nugget is several triathlons you can join as a team where maybe you'll swim and I'll bike and so-and-so will run. But the Gold Nugget doesn't necessarily have a team event where it serves as a relay. Everybody has to do the entire event. And then, like, for the mother-daughter team, for example, the mother and daughter's teams are added together and their result is a total time of those two put together.
Okay. It puts pressure on you or puts pressure on your daughter, or does it, which way does it go? Or does it matter?
No pressure at all. You know, my daughter's a pretty great Nordic skier and does all of her own things, but, you know, certainly does the Gold Nugget for fun, but not, you know, we're not terribly competitive, but no pressure, I would say, on either one.
Okay. So let's talk about biathlon as a sport. And you've done Ironman and you've done this short sprint. I mean, it's not still not short, but it's for a triathlon, it's short. For you, what sort of is the key for you to get to your level of success? It must have been a lot of training and a lot of fitness, but what else?
I think you probably, just like with any sport, you need to love what you're doing, you know, and enjoy it. Don't make it a chore, certainly not a job. And especially if you're, you know, you have a job and kids and, you know, that good part of your day is if you get to sneak in a workout and sort of making those quality. And I'm certainly not training like that right now or have any big races coming up. But, you know, what makes it successful is, I think, keeping it fun, you know, and putting in the time, practicing what you're, you know, what's knowing your course, knowing what the venue is, and just being well prepared.
How about how many hours would you have to put into it when you were really performing at that high level?
Oh, you know, training for something like the Gold Nugget is not that terribly time consuming just because it's such a short event. You don't really need to do anything long. I mean, I think you need to be prepared, but I wouldn't say it's terribly time consuming. Of course, if you're training for something in Ironman distance, you do have to spend a lot of time, you know, spinning on your bike and getting those hours in so you don't suffer on race day.
Well, it seems to me that people I've known who've done the full Ironman, it's all consuming. I mean, it's sort of like that's sort of what their life is like until that race comes.
I think you can make it all consuming, but you can also, I think, you know, I have a very early morning life before my kids wake up and try to sneak stuff in before work.
Oh, is that how you do it? It's like get up early and do a like intense workout before everybody else is awake?
That was sort of my routine for several years, you know, when you have little kids at home and you've got to get to work. So yeah, early morning's a great time to squeeze it in when the rest of the world is still sleeping.
Did you just economize on not sleeping that much? Or
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So just sleepy. You're important. Yeah. You can nap when you're at work.
No, I don't nap at work. But yeah, I mean, of course, you know, you do have to get a long bike ride in and a long run. So I'm sure you're giving up, you know, a weekend day to get in that long bike or a long run or get those hours in as your race gets closer.
Yeah. Is there, and I have no idea what the answer to this question is, but is there a difference in the vibe between something like Kona, which is a big Ironman race with international competitors, and something local like the Gold Nugget, where people are just doing it more for fun? I mean, is it? I would think that people would be much more intense at the sort of that Ironman level, which might make it less fun. I don't know. I'd be interested in what you think about the comparison of it.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely. There's energy in both. Certainly tons of energy. You can feel it. You can see it, whether you're participating or not in both events, but definitely a different kind of energy. Certainly more competitive and intense at something like an Ironman event, especially the World Championships. But the energy at the Gold Nugget isn't like you use the word vibe. It's a really great vibe. I mean, I'm sure there are people that are nervous, but it's a really...
it's kind of a sisterhood thing?
Yeah, it is a sisterhood thing. You know, and there's, you know, the balloon arches. And last year there was a really fun group of gals who put together the... can't remember exactly what they were called. I think the Red Lantern team. And they made sure there was a big posse of folks out there to run in the last competitor. And as the last finisher crossed the line, she had balloons and all these really fun things.
Nice.
And, you know, there are lots of teams that get together, new at school teams or business teams are open, you know, any group of friends that wants to form a team. And so people, you know, have, you know, matching shirts or, you know, we have a poster making station where people can make, you know, big posters, go mom, or they're for their friends or spouses. So we do lots of things to try to keep it fun, you know, and relaxed, but still very organized.
Okay. So what is the date of the race this year?
It's always the third Sunday of May. So this year, I believe it's May 20th.
Okay. And how much does it cost to enter?
I think, I'm not totally sure, but it should be in the ballpark of around $75, I believe, is entry fee.
Does that all go to running the race, or is there...
It does. We get asked a lot. Our board is a nonprofit. You know, we have, there are 12 of us that serve on the board, and no one is paid. You know, it's a year-round commitment. And people do ask, you know, it's such an expensive entry fee. Where does all this money go? And again, we're a nonprofit. We do have charities that we give back to. But, you know, we're paying we have a race management team that we do pay, you know, for our timing. You know, it's all chip timing. You know, every finisher gets a shirt, a water bottle. We pay for our traffic control, all the pool rentals, the trail fees, our USAT sanctioning body. We have to pay for our insurance, of course. Our website management, you know, there are lots and lots of things that go into planning a race. And so a lot of people think it might sound like an expensive entry fee, but, you know, we are using
it's
that money.
Just a huge event.
To kick back to the event, of course.
So looking at your career as an athlete, it seems like you've accomplished just about everything you might want to. I mean, eight times of winning the Gold Nugget. I don't know if like winning nine would be such an exciting goal for you. What goals do you have now in terms of your athletic career?
Oh, at the moment, I'm not really goal-oriented in terms of sports. I feel like I spend most time shuffling my own kids around to their sporting events these days. You know, I mean, I definitely try to stay fit and try to keep up with my kids, skiing and everything else. But, you know, I don't have any big races or triathlons coming up for me.
Do you do any coaching? I mean, it seems like you probably have a lot to teach.
I do. I volunteer right now. I'm helping at ROMIG. You know, I help with cross-country running and currently cross-country skiing. I'm involved with the Nordic Sea Club. I'm the director for Junior Nordic. You know, I help with my daughter's events, my son. So, yeah, I try to stay active in the community and, you know, volunteering with things like the Gold Nugget Triathlon, of course, and, you know, I'll put on a clinic when that gets closer. We always do a beginner's clinic and things like that, but not necessarily in terms of like a paid triathlon coaching position. No, I'm not, you know, into that by any means,
yeah.
But certainly do enjoy, you know, volunteering and giving back to the community.
Well, there's so much going on, right? I mean, we need a lot of volunteers and a lot of contributions to keep all of these events
Yankers
happening.
Is amazing that way. There's so many different things going on.
And the kid stuff. There's so much great kid stuff.
It's amazing. I mean, you have to sort of look at the calendar for the summer and pick what you want to do because there's so many things every weekend.
And even in the winter now, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's even, used to be that it was all ski races, and there's a ski race every weekend. Now there's also a foot race and probably a bike race, too.
Yeah. And not even just racing. I mean, Anchorage has a lot of other things in the outdoors. You know, that, like I said, there's Junior Nordic. ConocoPhillips is putting on, you know, the ice skating events at the Lagoon. Mm-hmm. There are tons of outdoor opportunities for kids and adults, which is, it's kind of what makes Anchorage a cool place to live.
Really exciting.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Shannon Donnelly. She's on the board with the Gold Nugget Triathlon. It's won it 8 times, as well as just about everything else in sight. And really neat to finally meet you.
Yeah, thank you.
And stay with us as Outdoor Explorer continues. Welcome back to Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth, and it's time again for our training calendar. This is the segment we've been doing with Lisa Keller, coach for Multisport Training of Alaska. We're doing the first Thursday of the month to check in on where you should be if you're planning to do some endurance events. You can't decide to do it the weekend before. You got to decide a long time before. And so we've been going through the events that are happening, and Tour of Anchorage is about a month away, which is the big ski race or tour, whatever you want to call it, 25, 40, or 50 kilometer. And hopefully you've already been training really hard for that, right, Lisa?
Yes, and it looks like we've had snow that's just held on for us to be able to train on it.
And we're always pre-recording, so if it's all melted, don't kill us. Yeah.
We're hoping it's not going to be melted.
Yeah.
So, yeah, hopefully you've been out on the course. You've been doing sections of the course. The 50K in particular, I think, you know, you need to get on the Spencer Loop and be doing that. You could be even doing that in shorter bouts so that you're not out for your entire time that you're going to do the race, but maybe an hour or two and you're doing intervals on Spencer Loop, doing fast-paced stuff.
Doing that huge climb right at the beginning.
Yep, exactly. Get ready for that. You know, your heart rate's just going to boom right away. So.
And it's all about not ruining yourself.
That's right. So you don't want to just take it really high up and not be able to recover. Part of doing races like this is not just that you can get that sustained high heart rate, but also that you can recover from it and be able to perform later on in the race without just crashing your whole body.
So that's why you include intervals or high intensity as well as distance.
Right. It's really good, even in a big endurance event that may take a couple of hours, to be doing some faster pace intervals that are faster than you would ever race, just to get your body used to that.
Mm-hmm. When you warm up for a long race like that, do you do I guess if it's a 50K, why warm up, right?
Right, exactly. that's exactly it. The rule of thumb is, the longer the race, the shorter the warm up.
I got you.
So if you're doing something like the Heart Run, you might spend half an hour, 45
Which
minutes.
Which is 5K. Yeah.
Exactly. Very short race. But if you're doing something like a 50K, you may just wait there till it starts, and you're going to warm up in the beginning.
The warm up is that first part when you're all skiing out for service. Yeah. All right. Well, what about some of the other events that are a little bit farther off?
Well, we're looking at Lava Man, which is going to be March 25th, which is
that's the Hawaii triathlon.
Correct. That's in Kona. It's an Olympic distance. It's 1.5K swim, 40K ride, and a 10K run. So right now we're kind of getting to more specific training for Lava Man. You definitely should be doing some heat training. You should be looking at your nutrition while you're doing your bricks, which is your bike runs. That's the most common bricks that you do.
Why is it called brick?
Well, there's a couple of theories about why it's called brick. Yeah. It could be, so BR, bike, run, ick. That's one theory. So your legs feel like brick. That's another theory of why it's called that. It's a term that's been around since the beginning of triathlon. Mm-hmm. So,
okay.
Yeah. But you want to get your legs used to making that transition. You want to get used to doing some bouts of that brick, since it's race specific, at the intensity you're going to race at. And so it's really good to do it, again, in a heated place and practice your nutrition, because you're going to absorb that nutrition at a different rate when you're working at high intensity in the heat than you do when you just go out for an easy run.
Yeah. Okay. What about the events that are happening a little bit later in the year?
So a little bit later, we're kind of looking at Gold Nugget and Eagle River, kind of lump those two together. They happen pretty close to each other. They're sprint triathlons, so they're typically a 500-meter swim, a 10 to 12-mile bike, and around a 3 to 4-mile run. So you're at the end of base training right now for Gold Nugget and Eagle River, which means you've done a long bike and a long run separately. You haven't started to do your bricks yet. That'll be the next cycle. So you're really still working, especially if you're not a strong swimmer, on technique. So in swimming, you got to work that technique part. We're not out on the road on our road bikes yet, and so technique on the bike is important in a race like Eagle River that has a very technical course. So right now, actually, for both of these races, fat biking is a great thing to be doing.
Sure.
And I really encourage my clients to get outside and be outside in the wintertime. And triathletes are notorious for having bad bike technique. They just get on a bike and they just grind, you know, straight away. What fat biking does is it really teaches people some technique if you get on some single track at a slower speed than mountain biking. So it's a little bit more doable, and it helps you be able to handle different terrain on the bike.
Cool.
Yeah, and it also is it's an early season ability that you can work is force. And so that's kind of your strength on the terrain. And so fat biking, I think, is an excellent source of training early on in the triathlon season.
Okay, neat. So what about those events that are happening in the summer? What would you be doing now in February to be getting ready for that?
So right now, we talked about Mayors a little bit, Mayors Marathon a little bit last month, and it is the start of the Mayors Marathon training season. So again, you should be working on increasing your long runs again. So maybe you're up to about an hour and a half run now. So you might, in the next 3 weeks, go an hour 40, an hour 50, and then 2 hours. And then your fourth week is always your cutback week for recovery, so then you might cut back to an hour at that point. So by the end of this cycle...
And that's one time a week for the long run.
One time a week, yeah. Most people do it on a Saturday or a Sunday, because that's when they have time. You should be up to about a two-hour run by the end of this cycle of training. And then we're going to keep increasing that long run as we go out.
Raises a question for me, because it's wintertime. And I would rather ski in the wintertime. I don't want to run in the wintertime. But if I wanted to, but I might be, maybe I've been training for an event like the Tour of Anchorage, so I've already doing a lot of distance. To what extent does that translate over to the running?
It translates somewhat. And right now we're in, for Mayors, we're in the more general training. So we're not specific yet. So at this early point, it really is okay to do those cross-training activities. And again, I'm always like, you got to go with what gives you joy. And so if you like those winter sports, if skiing gives you joy, it's early in the season for Mayors, do it. You still need to hold on to your running, though. So you need to be doing a little bit of running. And the long run is the trickiest one, because that's the one if you can't go from an hour to 3 hours in a week. Because you'll get hurt,
right?
So you
should be running maybe one day a week, no matter what, just so that you keep those muscles fresh.
Yeah, I would even say maybe 2 days a week
if you can squeeze that runner, in.
And they could be, 45-minute runs.
Okay, so. Cool. Well, I think we're about out of time. There's so much to talk about, but we'll be back again next month with the training calendar. Just tune in the first Thursday of the month. And we'll be here with Lisa Keller. Thanks so much for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me, Charles.
Lisa Keller of Multisport Training of Alaska, and you can find her website on outdoorexplorer.org. Well, welcome back. It's Outdoor Explorer, and I'm Charles Wolforth, and today I'm doing something that's a little bit like when your coworkers bring their kids' Girl Scout cookies to work and make you buy them. I'm going to be talking about a race that my daughter's school is putting on, which is kind of unusual because it's a wintertime foot race, and I'm actually here at Stellar Secondary to find out about it from Leanne Bonney. So, this is brand new, right? Hasn't been done before.
This is the first inaugural race, or annual race.
And you guys are raising money for, like, travel scholarships, or?
We're raising money for projects within Stellar, so travel scholarships for students. They do independent projects, so money that can go towards their project, just anything that supports students within our school.
Okay, cool. So why have a race in February? Is it like the only month that's left?
I think we started out at the beginning of the year saying we wanted to have a race and thought about Halloween, but there was already a lot of other races, and somehow settled on February.
Yeah. Yes. It could, a ski race might make more sense, right?
Right, but, you know, runners are out there running on the trail, you know, all year round, so.
Okay. Yeah. So tell me, give me some of the particulars. What's happening?
Okay, so it's happening Saturday, February 3rd at 10 o'clock at the Abbott Community Center off of Elmore. And it's a 5K race, and then there's a 1 mile fun walk run. It's on single track fun trails with routes and in the woods, so it should be a really fun race.
Okay, so regardless of the weather, I mean, it could be like 5 degrees below zero on that day.
Well, I mean, you know, once you're moving and you dress in your, you know, layers, you're good to go.
Uh-huh. So I saw a message that came out from the school email saying we need contributions of firewood. What's that all about?
Okay, so the Abbott Community Center has a covered picnic area, so we're going to have a fire going, marshmallows to roast, hot chocolate, so, you know, hopefully keep people warm. And kind of celebrate a little bit at the end.
Okay, cool. So what is the fee for being in the race and any other details?
It's so it is a timed race through Skinny Raven.
Okay.
And it is $20.
It's not free.
No, it's not free. It is a fundraiser. So it's $20 for an individual and $50 for a family. Uh-huh. And students can register through the Skinny Raven website, and they follow events and other timed events. And it's February freeze up.
All right, cool. So this is happening this coming Saturday, the 3rd. We're broadcasting the show the first time on the 1st. So if you're hearing the rerun, this great event has already happened, but maybe it'll happen again next year, right?
Yeah, I mean, if it's a big success, it could.
Yeah, yeah. So it sounds like fun. You get out there on a frosty morning and have a run and stand around the campfire and, like, have hot chocolate and s'mores?
Yes, that's exactly it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that was a guess.
Yeah, yeah, that's the idea. Get your run in early and then, you know, go out and enjoy the rest of your day guilt-free.
Uh-huh. Well, I know Stellar, so I know it'll probably be fun. So thanks, Leanne Bonney, teacher here at Stellar Secondary, and the kids you hear in the background are getting ready to get home from school.
That's all for today's show. If you have an outdoor event you'd like to talk about on our show, please get in touch through our Outdoor Explorer Facebook page. We're always looking for new topics, and we might be able to do an interview. Thanks to Shannon Donnelly, who joined us earlier to talk about the Gold Nugget Triathlon, Jenny DeGrappa and Diane Barnett, who are with us to talk about the Ski for Women, Lisa Keller with a training calendar, and Aaron Whitney Whitmer, who spoke at Trail Tales. You can find out more about all these segments at outdoorexplore.org. Our producer is Eric Bork. Assistant producer is Hannah Duro. I'm Charles Wolford. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal the Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.